good practitioner of anger, so I guess you learn best that which you are most involved with. And I guess I grew up in a situation where anger was always let hang out. I grew up on a farm in southern Minnesota, and if you got angry, you went out in the woods and you picked up a stick and you hit it against a tree and you got it all out, and then it was a double purpose, because when it became your time to go pick up the wood for the wood stove to heat the house, you could go pick up all those things that you broke when you were angry. So it not only got it out constructively, but it made your next job a little bit easier. So we're going to look a bit at anger and our awareness of it. I work as a family life educator for a counseling agency in Kitchener, Ontario, an hour west of Toronto. And I do a variety of personal growth courses, one of which has been on anger, which I've done about four times a year for the last 8 years. And often I'll put up graffiti sheets around the wall, or I'll set them on the tables. And when people come in early, they can write some things down on it, and a couple of the sheets will be labeled, when I'm angry, I feel. When I'm angry, I do. Another listing is things I learned about anger at my parents' knees and other joints. And it's been interesting to see some of the responses that people have put down. Now, I'll often have teenagers and their 16, 17-year-olds on up to 70-year-olds or above. I haven't ever asked for an age range. But some of the graffiti on the sheets has been very interesting, especially the what did I learn at my parents' knees and other joints. The ones that I remember most specifically are, if you get angry, mother isn't going to love you. Dad isn't going to love you. If you get angry, God isn't going to love you. If you get angry, you'll go straight to hell.
One of the seven deadly sins.
That's right. So we're going to look at some of what we have learned about anger and when we become aware of anger. And one of the things I'd like to begin with is just to look at some of the kind of puzzling attitudes towards this puzzling emotion, and to pull together some of those things that my students have told me. The book by David Augsburger on Caring Enough to Confront lists some of these, and I thought we can start out with that. Six basic ways of looking at anger, and then a seventh. And Augsburger talks about that we sometimes look at anger as evil, so therefore deny it, pretend it doesn't exist. That's kind of a moralistic view. If you get angry, God's not going to love you, or you'll go straight to hell. Or if you get angry, anger is an attack, so therefore you better suppress it or you're going to get into trouble, and that's fearful. You know, what's going to happen if I get angry? I'll lose all control, and maybe somebody will fill in the blank. Anger, another one, is that it's immaturity. Once you grow up, you won't be bothered with it anymore. And so all you have to, and that's a superior view. See, I'm not, and they're probably back to number one denying it. You know, I don't ever get angry. Me angry, who? Power. Anger is power, so therefore assert it. Let it work for you. Doesn't matter who you knock down in the process, go for it. And that's kind of self-centered. If I can win, go right to it. Power often scares people and then allows. I mean, little kids learn that very early, right? And if you had a 2-year-old, and they start, or 18-month-old, a 3-year-old, they start temper tantrums, and sometimes they never grow out of them, and they can be 93 and still be acting on what they learned at a year and a half. Just fuss loud and long and enough, and you'll get your way. So that's, in a sense, power. I'll get what I want. Power can be self-destructive, so therefore you better ventilate it, because if you keep it inside, it's just going to, it might develop a lot of physical symptoms such as ulcers, colitis, headaches, hypertension, arthritis, a lot of relationship in physical symptoms from what's kept within. So in order not to be self-destructive, let it out. Now, that might work with some things, and I'm not sure that that's always the therapeutic view in this particular book it labels that, because sometimes it can be very destructive. And we need to figure out positive ways, and we'll get into that in a little bit, that there are there can be positive ways to ventilate it, certainly. We can look at anger as an arousal or a signal that says, hey, something is going on. What am I really feeling? What can I do about it? What is it that I really need to work on? So we want to find a way, therefore, to manage, to direct, to deal with it, and that's a behavioral view. Taking responsibility for what's happening within me. So, that's one way of looking at anger, and a kind of basic underlying foundation is that anger is basically a demand, an expectation. A kind of demand, if you were only more like me, I wouldn't have to get angry at you. I wouldn't have to feel this way. So it's you that's caused it. You made me angry. He, she, it, they make me angry. And if that were really true, in order to solve your anger, we'd have to treat the whole world. Well, that's not very easy to do. But we can begin to look at what are those demands, and most often those demands are ones that came about very early in life, about the time when you started to do temper tantrums, when we sort of felt this omnipotent, and our favorite words were mine, me, I, you know, those stages that your children have gone through, you've seen kids go through. Some of us never grew out of those stages either. And we feel things ought to be the way they were back then. It's a learned response. Good news about that, yes.
What are you using for a definition of anger? And we got calm, we got anger, we got mad?
Yeah, and there, I think that's a continuum. And we can look at that in a minute. Where do we begin to identify what is happening? That arousal, that signal that says, oh, something's not right. It shouldn't be that way. We get very involved with the shoulds, the musts, the oughts, the have-tos. Albert Ellis, who's a therapist and the father of rational emotive therapy, talks about shoulds, if you'll excuse the expression, that whenever we tell ourselves shoulds, we tend to act shitty. And he was very fond of saying shoulds equals shoulds. He also talked about turd-like behavior, but I could never quite figure out what the difference was. We were in a three-day workshop with Albert Ellis a number of years ago during some counseling training, and that was one of his favorite expressions, and somebody at one time said, well, if you can't use should, or caught him in using, he made the statement about should, and somebody said, Dr. Ellis, you just did one of your no-nos. And he said, it would be nice if I remembered. It would be helpful. So the other alternatives to the shoulds, it would be nice, it would be helpful, it would be beneficial to give you some leeway, because what is absent in that should as we deal with some of our feelings? So if we look at anger as that kind of emotional response that tells us that something is going on, it's an arousal, it's a signal, it's that emotional response around some demand or some expectation that doesn't seem to be met. And it can be at a very low level, and it can be outrage. When I do one of the handouts I use with the courses that I teach include a vocabulary of feelings list, and I don't have them available here, but it looks at where it starts at mild, and then moderate, and then strong, if we talk about what kind of level. And as we talk about feelings, to recognize, Jambalsky says there's two feelings, love and fear. Another way of describing is that there's two basic feelings, that's of pain and pleasure. And I think it's always interesting that I've had this vocabulary of feelings list for well over 20 years. I have no idea where it came from. But it has over the top two columns for pleasure, and they're under happy and caring. And it has eight columns of pain. And I would put all of those eight columns under anger. And the columns are depressed, inadequate, fearful, confused, hurt. They have a column for angry, but I don't think it's limited to that. Lonely, and then guilt, shame. And they begin at the bottom with the mild level, go up to moderate, and then up to the strong. To give us an idea and to recognize that there are a lot of words. And for any of you who were in the session just before as we dealt with intimacy with Ross, the whole issue of feelings and how difficult it is sometimes to connect with what that feeling is that we sometimes, we often substitute think for the word feeling. I think I need to go home or to take a nap rather than I feel tired. That it's easier to put a statement of thought in there than it is to put a statement of an owning I feel. And that brings me into that last part there, Tom Gordon's iceberg theory of anger. And now I've never really seen an iceberg, so you'll give me some artistic liberty. But I understand that an iceberg is about one ninth below the water, and there's similarities between that iceberg and anger. That often that emotion that we feel of anger is what sticks up above the water. And the feelings that really have produced that anger are down below and unknown or unsearched out by us. There are some people, however, that even that one ninth is not available to them, and their water line might be way up here. We all know some people, I'm not angry. Oh, I'm not getting angry. It's other people that get angry. Me? Anger? Or they may be the ones who wrote on that graffiti sheet, you know, what I learned in my early years, if I ever get angry, I'll go straight to hell or God won't love me, so you don't dare recognize that anger. However, even if that little tip comes through, what it's helpful to remember is that anger, what does appear, is a second response to a more primary feeling. And there are the whole list of angry feelings under there. Help me fill this in. Think back to the last time you were angry, or if you don't want to deal personally, I have a friend who. I had to deal with somebody who was really angry about, and what are some of those feelings? When I feel angry, I'll most often feel rejected.
Put down.
Anyone else?
Hurt. Abandoned.
Unrecognized.
Unappreciated.
Somebody took my place.
Pardon?
Left out.
Okay.
Overtaxed, and I don't mean money.
Could be that way too.
To get tired.
Frustrated.
Frustrated, let me stop with that. Unfortunately, frustrated is frequently used as a synonym for anger. I'm frustrated, but may still not really know what is producing that frustration under there. Am I frustrated because I feel rejected, abandoned, whatever? What about embarrassed? How many of you ever get really angry because you're embarrassed?
Misunderstood.
Embarrassed.
Shame.
Misunderstood. How about afraid?
Sad comes out as anger.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Variety of feelings under there. And if we can begin to look at what's really underneath that anger, then we can come up with a lot more information about how to deal with that anger. What's really going on? What are some of my needs? What are some of my demands? What are some of my expectations? Anger is just too global. It's like an umbrella. It may shelter you from the rains It shelters your nose, your eyes, your ears, your teeth, your chin, your shoulders, your chest, your hair. It shelters a lot. But you don't exactly, it's helpful. It's a signal, but it doesn't give it the specifics. So we want to, and we want to get down to what's below. And we might find that it's helpful to say, I'm angry, and fill in the blank. I'm angry, and once you begin to feel more comfortable with that, you may even begin to leave out the angry and say, I'm embarrassed. I really hurt. What happens back to when somebody does something really foolish that could be quite deadly? You know, running out in the front of a car, just ambling down the street and not watching whether the light is green for you to walk across, and you walk up. I mean, and if you're with somebody, and particularly if you're with a child who does this, you've probably all experienced this. If you've seen a little toddler run out into the street who still doesn't know that streets are dangerous, and you get so outraged, and you pull him in, and you shake him, and you do, well, what's really underneath there? You are absolutely frightened and scared. It's not that you're angry at the kid. It's really that you're frightened and scared that something is going to happen. But you act on the anger instead of dealing with this. I'm so scared that something would happen to you. I have to keep you away from the street. We're going into the house for a while until we can learn not to run into the street.
A lot of my anger comes from, how dare you do that to me? You know, it comes from an egotistical point, like, sure, I'm worth more than the way you just treated me.
Yeah, and that's back to our demand that you ought to know how to treat me better, that you ought to respect me, and I feel rejected. I feel put down. I feel unappreciated. And you should appreciate me. You should respect me. You should care. Back to our shoulds again. It would be helpful if, I would appreciate it if you would fill in the blank. That's getting in touch with our feelings and our needs. And how do we deal with those? The anger is a learned response. The good news about that is that anything that's learned can be unlearned and relearned. And yet, see, when we make a response about anger, we want somebody else to change, right? But we don't want to change. It's too hard. Why unlearn it? Just make somebody else change. Then I won't have to learn it. They do, but that's okay for them. They can unlearn it. Well, so...
Are you saying if it's learned, it's not natural then for us to have anger?
Good point. It's learned. How we respond to action. Now, let me take this off. Well, let's leave that off. That what we want to look at about, what we want to remind ourselves, that we probably have all heard, but it's hard to remember and hard to put it into practice, is that all feelings are okay. It's not just right to be happy and bad to be sad, because it may be very appropriate. You've lost someone, you're sad. There's nothing right or wrong with that. And how many of you remember way back to Mary Tyler Moore program when they were having a eulogy for Chuckles the Clown? And Mary had been going with Chuckles the Clown, and so all the TV station comes to this eulogy, and there's a minister, everybody's in black, Mary is even in black, and the minister starts to present the eulogy about Chuckles the Clown who died. And Mary's sitting back there, and all of a sudden her face goes, and she goes, and everybody turns around and looks at her with a scowl, and she wipes the smile off her face, and then it begins to creep back on again, and she starts to chuckle, she starts laughing, everybody stops and turns around and looks at her. And it happens a third time, and finally, the eulogizer says, you're right. Chuckles lived his life on this earth to make us laugh. And if we can remember those things where he helped us to laugh and enjoy life, that's what he would want to be remembered for. So then they started to all tell these stories and all laugh. Now, Now, we might think in those situations that laughing was a very inappropriate thing for Mary to have done in this somber service, and yet it turned out to be more appropriate than the somberness was. So it's not that feelings are right or wrong, but we have choices on our actions. And that's what we learn. The feelings are natural. Feelings are you. Feelings are part of you. Response, the kind of response within us, our ability to respond to what's happening within us. But we have choices on how we can act on our feelings. And it's the choices then that become judgeable as right or wrong, helpful, not helpful. So anger can be a very natural response, and if it's a feeling that's in response to some great injustice, something that should not be happening, is not helpful to be happening, the number of people who are starving or who don't have proper homes or a place to sleep, I mean, that should move us to some kind of action. And anger, we have choices on it. We can walk by. It's like the story of the Good Samaritan, how many walked by and who ended up stopping to help. You know, how might we act in a way that can prevent more injustices from happening? How can we act in a way that's going to resolve the problem that for which I chose to be angry? Then, so there's two things to remember. One is that, or several things to remember. One is that all feelings are okay. They're not right or wrong. Second, that we have choices on how we act on those feelings, and it's those choices then of our actions that become judgeable. So how we deal with our anger, those choices are what we've probably learned from our early years. Or we have seen work for someone, and so try to appropriate it for myself. Well, they got their way. They got out of this, whatever, so I'll try it too and see how that works for me. And sometimes it does, and sometimes it doesn't. I mean, anger does get its way sometimes, rightly or wrongly. People do get away with violent anger, and you're fearful of them, and you back off, and you let them, because you don't want to hurt or get somebody else hurt. That may be very unjust. But it may be a wise thing to do in some situation when you know that what power you have is minimal compared to what power the other person has. You may not explode at your boss, who may justly deserve to be exploded at because they've done some very unjust things or unfair things. But you may figure out another way to deal with it. So we can look at those feelings and our choices. That's one of the things to remember. But that's often difficult because we want to put the responsibility onto somebody else. It's as if somebody has a remote control to my feeling center. So somebody is going flicking the channels there. Now I'll be happy, now I'll be sad, now I'll be exuberant, now I'll be... And that I'm just a puppet. I just respond to somebody else's determination for me. So we look at those choices that we have. Now, that's probably the most difficult thing to put into practice because we have lived our lives for so long in response to what will other people think, other people make me, hearing from our growing up, from little years on up, you make me. I need to take responsibility for somebody else's feelings. Is there anybody who did not grow up with that kind of situation where some parent or some teacher or some senior has not said to you, you make me, fill in the blank, angry. You're going to be the death of me. You're making me late. You're making me outraged. You're making me tired. And so we began to take on the responsibility that I am responsible for someone else. I do a lot of parenting classes. And I hear many parents in telling stories talk about, I do encourage my child, I'll say, you make me so happy. Well, that's not so bad, or is it? I mean, am I going to put my happiness into my 3-year-old or my 15-year-old or my 27-year-old's hands and not have to take responsibility for it myself? That might be nice, but it's not their responsibility, it's mine. So we look at some of these things on responsibilities. So, anyone raise a question about, you know, how do we, what about feelings and having these choices and taking responsibility for our actions?
What's a better thing to say than you make me happy?
I really feel happy when I see such and such done. Or I am delighted to see you have so much fun with that. Or I really enjoy hearing your jokes.
That's taking responsibility for your own feelings.
And letting the other person know what it is I liked. Rather than having them guess or not know, or having to feel they're in charge of my my life, my feelings. We can own them. They're yours. They're all yours. Your feelings define who you are. We probably also have grown up through much of our life with somebody denying my feelings. Oh, you really don't feel that way. Right? Or you shouldn't feel that way. It's kind of naughty to feel that way.
You'll have more fun if you...
Yeah. Just listen to me. I really know.
Look, Kathy, don't look so sad.
Yeah. And haven't you even had somebody that's come up to you and you're sort of worn out or you're tired and they'll say, oh, come on, smile. Just put that little smile. You look so great when you smile. I feel so good when you smile. Or you make me feel so good when you smile. Just smile. And don't you just want to sit there and... or else you quickly put on a smile, you know, a put on face smile just to get rid of them, right? Get them off your back. It's not inside. Okay, so about feelings and recognizing that anger is really a second response to a more primary feeling, and to get in touch with feelings. They're all yours. They're all okay. They're not right or wrong. Identify. And that's probably a lot harder for men to do than women to do. It may not be for some, but in general, because we have not allowed men to have. Men have not been allowed to have feelings. They were to always be strong and never to have any of these other feelings. And that's ridiculous because we all have feelings. We need to recognize them and need to acknowledge them and accept them, and then we can make choices on what our actions are going to be. So, recognizing feelings is one part of understanding anger. Second part is to recognize what goes on within you when you begin to identify those feelings. What really happens? Now, I have a friend who let's share some of your ideas. When there are feelings of anger, what are some of those early signs that let you know that your emotions might be starting to rise and you're getting to feel uncomfortable? Remember, it's a signal. We want to get in touch with signals. Second important thing it tells us, not only that it's a signal to us, is that anger is not just in the head. It's a whole physical thing. It's a whole body thing.
My heart rate goes up.
Your heart rate goes up. It increases. That's one way of telling that there's something happening. What else?
Tightness in my mouth.
Yeah.
Friend's mouth.
Tightness in my gut.
Yeah. We feel something in here. Your hand may begin to shake. Your mouth begins to tighten. You can see it. If you're not the one being angry, you can see it on the other person. Something is happening with your face that's telling them. What else?
I lose all ability to deal rationally with words.
Okay, and that's important to recognize, that when those words are just not the ones I may choose to use, or they're not there at all. Sometimes they're there. For some people, it's just lost. There's no words to even express it. For some other people, it's a different style of words, and it's a lot of cuss words, and it's a lot of throwing out accusations and blamings and labels onto the other people. If only you were more like me, I wouldn't have to get so angry. So now I need to put you down to get you right in your place. Okay.
Kinetic, do I want to kick something?
You've got some energy. You've got some energy that you want to get out somewhere at something.
I love you, so I'm going to slap you.
I love you, so I want to slap you. I love you so much. There's a marvelous little Arlo and Janice cartoon, which is a little cartoon we have in our papers. Doesn't make a lot of sense, but that's often the way we analyze things. What else?
I have a more fearful response. I get quiet. I want to change the subject. I want to get into another location. Mm. I'm an escapist.
Yeah. Sure. And that's we either have a fight
or flight.
We flight or we submit.
No, I'm not familiar with that one.
Never happens. But it's a learned response. We have learned to either fight back, we have learned to run away from it, or we just, what else can I do? Mm-hmm. And we give in without recognizing that there's a fourth one, and that's dealing with it. Okay. So we've got some choices. We're not just limited, and we're not just boxed in and padlocked to respond in a certain way. Now, my experience was that there was a lot of yelling and screaming and maybe running around. I mean, nobody else could hear you because we were half a mile away from any other farm place. So things could happen differently. Now, when I started to go to university, and moved away from home and lived with 12 other people in a house, realized that there were some things that had to change. You can't do it in the same way. And then when you marry someone who's grown up in a household where anger was a never spoken word, you begin to recognize that there's some more modification to make. So there are, it's okay to change. I mean, we're always in the process of change. Now, we live in the Kitchener-Waterloo area of Ontario, which has a large old order Mennonite population. So when we talk about change, in any other part of the country, I could probably say, you know, if we weren't ready to change, we'd still be out in horse and buggies. Well, I can't use that as an illustration there, because I don't mean to put them down, but to say there are some people for whom change is very difficult, and change has a lot of strong values to it. And so they may not be willing to do some changes, but for those of us for whom we're not caught into that time bind and dealing with those values, we have some other choices. And we've readily changed to cars from horse and buggies. How do we then change in some of our behavior? Some of the choices we make about those feelings which are natural, feelings which are all okay. What do we do about that? And how can we begin to recognize those physical symptoms that will ring this bell that says, oh, wait a minute, something's happening. Before it gets out of control, what can I do about it? So it's that owning it. I have these feelings. Identifying it. What's really happening now? What's going on? And accepting it. Yeah, I do feel. Now, where do I go from here? What can I do about it? Can I manage? Is it still at a low enough level that I can manage to deal with it? Is it getting too hot to handle that I need to take some time out? That I can find a timeout signal that I share with my partner that says, oh, I need 5 minutes, 15 minutes, whatever. Depending upon the level and your kind of response to anger, if you're the explosive kind, you may need an hour, a half an hour. There are some who recommend take no less than a half an hour of time out before you come back to deal with it. If you catch it soon enough and it's not that big a deal, you might be able to just walk to the bathroom, splash your face with water, go into the kitchen, get a glass of water to drink or something, don't get anything else to drink. It's alcoholic, or it may make it worse, and be able to come back. Sometimes it's just the change of scenery. We often send children to time out when they have gotten out of control. And I hate the whole Dennis the Menace routine where they put them in a corner, because I think that's also demeaning, and that just adds to the anger rather than reduces it. I have had a lot of parents who say that their children choose a window for timeout because there's so much else to see and that the world is really okay. And they can come back and say, I really feel a lot better now. I'm able to deal with it. Maybe we need to do that sometime too. Just plain go look out the window. Get another view on things. And to recognize that you are the only one that can put yourself in control. Somebody else can't get you back under your own control. They can get you under their control, perhaps, if you choose to let them. But how do you get back in control of your own decision-making, your own actions, what you're going to do? What are some of your choices? So you may find some that after you own the feeling and you can identify what's going on, I'm angry and instead of choosing to fight, flight, or submit, you may choose to deal with it, but maybe at this time, it's difficult. You're not, things have escalated to a point that you're not sure you're going to say what you want to say. So you may then choose to take that time out. I need 15 minutes to cool off and to be able to think more clearly about this. Instead of sending children or somebody else up to the room and you stay there until you're going to act like a human being again, to be able to say, I think we need some renewal time to think about what's happening. The other way is punishing them for having feelings. Rather than saying feelings are okay, but we need to get back in touch with what we're going to do with them. What are we going to do? So let's look at what might be some of those things that we can do in a timeout that allows you to renew yourself, to get back into thinking again. I think it's Albert Ellis that says when we're angry, we're actually temporarily insane. Now, that's scary in a way, isn't it? Because we're not really in control of our thinking when we really get very angry and we start to lash out. We're not really using our thinking ability. We're out of touch. So in order to get us back in touch, we may need to make a change for a bit. We may need some time out for renewal time. And there are a whole variety of things that you might choose to do to renew yourself. Now, what's comforting to you?
Chocolate.
That was...
one of the four basic food groups.
That was a marvelous quick response right there and ready. Okay?
You eat or throw.
We need to, and I often, when I do my workshops, I do a 9-hour, three-session workshop, meeting 3 hours a week for 3 weeks. So we, in 9 hours, began to look at what are some of our choices and how do we begin to make that list that you may post on your cupboard door or your bathroom door, maybe a kitchen cupboard door, that allows you to remind yourself, I have some choices. And when I feel that I'm getting out of control and that I'm going to yell some things or do some things that I may not want to do, that may not help solve the problem, here's something else I can do. And I open the cupboard door and I might say, eat a chocolate bar. Keep them around just for that purpose only. We might find that we get angry more often when we want that chocolate bar. What other choices do we have? Chocolate may not work for someone else. If it works for you, fine. What else?
I call Joni, my good friend.
Call another friend. Okay.
Scrub the floor.
Mm. Sure. Sometimes, and
Connecticut.
Yeah. When you feel you've got to get out something and you can't go out in the woods and beat those sticks against the tree, you might scrub the floor. I have one mother who said she has 4 sons who are all school age, and they all wear white socks. And white socks and school age kids out on the fields do not end up with white socks. And she says one of the one of the traditions or policies in our home is that when they take those socks off, they go right into a pail in the wash sink that has soapy water in it. And whenever I get angry or anyone gets angry in the house, their time out is to go scrub some socks with soap. She says we have less anger, we have less destructive anger, and we have the whitest socks in the whole neighborhood. She said, I do it very frequently. But the kids do it too.
How about run or go for a long walk?
You may run and go for a long walk, and that's a lot more preferable than taking your car out for a ride. We have a good friend who was in a fight with his wife, took the car out, went out in the country area, and didn't stop at a stop sign, and ran and got smashed by a truck. The truck driver said, I didn't think anyone could walk out of this wreck. The fellow did, but the fellow said, I will never get into the car again if I'm angry or mad, because I'm not fully aware of what's happening. Walking.
I used to do my best ironing.
Ironing!
I hate ironing, but boy, I get in and I just...
I have a marvelous story to tell about my own experience with anger and ironing. When we were, yes, it really rings a bell. When our kids were in elementary school, they still, and that was just before wash and wear clothes came in, or at least we didn't have a lot of the wash and wear clothes. And I would, and Paul was wearing shirts that needed ironing, and he was often out at meetings, church meetings at night. And I would sit, the girls would be in bed, and I would finally decide this was the day I'd better get at ironing. And I'd put the ironing board up, set it up, watch television, and ironed, and usually there was not anything decent on television, so I'd sit there thinking of all the things that got done that shouldn't have gotten done, that all those things that didn't get done that should have gotten done, and everything that fell in between. And by the time Paul came home, I would have a whole gunny sack full of stuff that I would just throw out about, you should have, and we didn't, and why, and all these. And after a couple of times, he began to say, you've been ironing again. And I said, don't change the subject. It has nothing to do with ironing. But little by little, I began to put the two pieces together. It did have something to do with ironing. So fortunately, we had a niece that came to live with us as she started university. And she took over the washing and the ironing, and we had a much more peaceful household. When she left, I then began to recognize a little bit more wash and wear and how I could take things out of the dryer and not have to iron them. And it may not have been efficient with the electric bill to iron one or two things at a time, but it was certainly a lot more healthy relationship-wise in our household. So you can choose to change a pattern and find something else that fits. What else can you do for that timeout? You might listen to some soothing music. It may not even be soothing, but it helps you to get out. You may go and exercise and get out your energy in a more healthful way than using it on somebody else.
Write.
You can write. Write out what you're feeling. Write out what you need. Write out what you see the problem to be. Write out how I... And if we can do as much of that writing with I statements, the letter I, not this, what you see through. I'm feeling, and I need, and I want, and I don't like it when I see, and I would, you know, I expect to get out, to identify what your responsibility in that situation is, to identify what your participation in that situation is. Not you make me, and if you would only, and... Because if we continue to blame the other person, we don't do anything to take ownership of our own feelings. We're putting them out there saying, you've got to take care of me. And that's my responsibility to take care of me. It's nice when somebody else helps, but I cannot expect them to take responsibility. That's my job.
I don't know if this is appropriate timing, but often I'll get in discussions about anger, and it'll go to the object that we're angry at rather than the feelings that are causing the anger. And I don't know how to get out of that.
Okay, so instead of saying that dumb car.
Yeah.
If only.
People that are driving this bad. And, you know, yeah. All these different things that we can project.
Stupid driver.
Stupid drivers are, you know, there are lots of situations.
situations. Yeah. Well, then you get discussion about how badly people are driving rather than to get into the feelings that are causing.
Yeah.
You'd even ban that driver in the first place.
Yeah.
You know, and so
I guess I'm really feeling pretty short about what other people do and about what I should be doing. You know, is there something missing within me that I'm feeling short about other people? Mm-hmm. Am I judging myself rather harshly so that I feel I have to judge other people harshly also? Mm-hmm. Sometimes when we're upset with other people, it may be because we're upset with ourselves. Mm-hmm. And it may be easier to put it off on the other people and not have to deal with what's going on within me.
Are there tools to get it back?
Yeah. Is there a better way for me to take care of myself today? And we'll talk about that in a sense when we deal with some issues of self-esteem on Friday and Saturday. Because the whole how I look at myself, how I feel about myself, certainly has an impact and an effect on how I'm going to deal with those feelings that I have. How I can put them together. So my own sense of myself, my own respect for myself.
So it takes introspection rather than projection.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. You know, how can we look inside before we go outside? Yeah. And I'm getting awfully short with about these drivers. What am I really saying? Now, I used to get very, very upset, particularly at drivers, impatience. And I can remember when we were moving from Western Massachusetts to Southern Ontario, one hot summer day, driving in the car to show our daughters a house we had bought, I guess, or we were going to buy. It was their first time going up. Neither daughter was moving up to Waterloo with us. One was in university, the other was going on to university. But it was this hot 90-degree day. We didn't have air conditioning in the car. We were behind a truck, and we were stalled for an hour to go through customs in the Buffalo area. And pretty soon, my daughter started to try to get me to laugh, and I got angrier and angrier because you just don't understand the situation kind of thing. Well, and I began to realize that was not very healthy or personally or healthful in the relationship. Some years later, I was going to a conference in Chicago, and our daughter was in graduate school in Chicago at the time. And I had to go through downtown. She was at the University of Chicago in South Chicago. I had to go through the loop to get to West Chicago to where the conference was. And it started at 9 in the morning, so it meant I had to go with all the traffic. I had her car. And she said, Mother, you're not going to survive 5 days of these kind of things, because they were doing some construction, she said, with your impatience in driving. I don't know, maybe you really ought to stay out there and not commute back and forth. And I was determined that I could manage. And I did. I had brought some audio tapes along with me. I had her tape deck in the car. And I went through about 10 different tapes, each 3 times. I learned what James Kern was saying, and I learned what and I was impressed with myself that I had managed without crawling through the roof. Her car did not have any dents on it, and I did not have a stroke. My blood pressure, but it really, and I'd gotten the idea from somebody who said that they had done undergraduate and all their graduate work commuting in and out of Detroit, Michigan, to get into one of the downtown universities, and they said they knew after the first few weeks that they were not going to survive even the first year of university if they did not figure a way to use that time and traffic jams. And the fellow said he survived by deciding he would learn German, and then he decided he'd learn French, and then he decided he'd learn Spanish. And that's a passage of about 6-7 years. He learned 3 languages fluently by listening to records on the tape deck. Well, I thought, that's a pretty good idea, and that's really what helped me to survive and has helped me survive in some other long kinds of trips. We've got some choices to make. And if something is not working, what's an alternative? What else can you do? How can you figure out a solution so that you can survive whole without minimizing, without getting into some problems? So how can to look at owning the demands, identifying what those feelings are, accepting the fact that you have some feelings, and to admit that kind of irritation you feel, and where is it going? Is it from mild to moderate, and is it going up to push off the roof? How can we catch it before it gets to that boiling point? Yes.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the timeout theories and all the things you can do during them are good, but, you know, the times that I get angry a lot, too, are just when I'm angry at myself, you know. Mm-hmm. Because you do something that is really dumb, and you can get really angry. I mean, I hate to think of what would happen if another person had done what I just done. I'd probably slug them, you know. And so if I do it, I can't slug myself, so...
We do it inside.
You know, but I mean, you can do some really silly things, you know. You can fill up your diesel full of regular gas and drive down and wonder why your engine isn't working. And you know, if somebody else had done that, you could really, you know, you could really get angry. But you get angry at yourself. You can't take time. I mean, you take time out for yourself. It's really, you know, you're in this thing all by yourself. You haven't got anybody else to blow it off of, you know.
You may not have, yeah. And you may not have anyone else, but as one person suggested, that maybe it's helpful to call a friend and to say, do you know what I just did? And maybe that catharsis, that sharing, that getting it out is helpful. Sometimes you may make an arrangement with your friend to say, you don't need to sympathize with me. All I need to have you do is to time me and give me 5 minutes to blow off my steam. You don't even have to pat me on the head or on the hand, or, you know, if you want to, you can give me a hug afterwards. But you don't have to solve it for me. The partner may have a second choice, and that is to ask at the end of, to identify when 5 minutes is up and to say, do you want another 2 minutes? And if you still need some more time to finish, take the 2 minutes, and they can call time on 2 minutes, and then it's a thank you. Don't rehash it. Don't go over it again. But just plain get it out. Sometimes writing is very helpful. If we keep it around and we keep reading it over again, and then we go...
It's like letting
a sore heal, and then you pick off the scab just a day before it's supposed to, and then it has to heal again, but before it's completely done and ready to come off, you pick it off again. Well, if that's what you do with your anger journals, then it may be more therapeutic to use sheets of paper instead of a nice book and take it out and tear it up and burn it. And light a match to it and see it go and to say, amen. It's gone. But if you keep rehashing it, if you keep rehashing it in a negative way that just builds up that, and it just adds me, because you've already had the experience of where it's gotten you up to this far, and you rehash it again, it'll get you up quicker the next time, and you'll explode faster.
It's a great adrenaline pump.
Yes, well, and if you have to move a log from a roadway or pull a car off a child that's been run over, that may be helpful if you get that rush of adrenaline and it gives you more strength to deal with the impossible. But most of our situations are not of such nature. And if we recognize that I thought I hid that away, and then you come upon it and you read it again and you get so mad, I mean, everything had calmed down and then you get so mad again. It's not very healthy to keep that around. It may be more therapeutic to just tear it into as many small pieces as you can, throw it into the garbage, tear it into some pieces, burn it up. The writing is very healthy. If you look at it the next day and you want to rewrite it and can do it in a more logical frame of mind and give it to the other person and to say, and it deals with how you feel and what I feel and what I need, rather than laying blame onto you and putting all the responsibility onto your lap. If I can give you something that tells you how I feel so that you better understand me, you can better understand me, then it may be healthy and helpful to give it to the other person. If it's full of vindictives and you shoulds and you shouldn'ts, it's not going to help the situation, because it'll just build up their defiance, their resistance, their defensiveness. And there'll be more they're ready more to spout off at you. I mean, you've added more flame to their fire. So how we deal with what's happening in ways that can help to resolve, it will depend. Will vary with different people. Sometimes, if you're beginning to feel that anger rising, you may have to ask for time out. I would suggest it's not helpful if you just plain turn and walk out, stomp out the door and slam the door. Because that may be what they will do to you the next time they feel that anger, and you're going to come running after them and say, "Don't you walk out on me, and don't you dare slam that door, and you come back here and we're going to finish this." Which may not be very helpful. So you might just want to say, "I need 10 minutes, and then I'd like to deal with this." And do something, or whatever length of time you feel is going to be important to you. You will know, and you need to figure that out. And then when to come back and to deal with it. And what you can do during that timeout so that you can deal with it. Some of the things that may be helpful not to remember are not helpful when we're dealing with anger, to keep it from escalating, is to not use names and labels, to talk more about what I'm feeling than what you have done to me, to talk about what I need rather than how miserable and lousy and whatever it is that you are. Some suggest that if you come back and you deal with this, or before you can leave that for that time out, it may be better if you don't look the other person in the eye. Because seeing that eye and seeing them with such a, and you just, that may escalate from the mild to the moderate and moderate to the rage quicker. So look in a different direction. Sometimes it's helpful to practice some relaxation, and it may be to just lean forward and put your elbows on your knees and put your head down. Not in a way of submitting that they're going to chop off your head, but that it may allow more blood to come to your head, or if you can take some deep breaths to allow more oxygen to go to your brain and help you to think better. To avoid language that includes threats. How do you feel when somebody threatens you? Like threatening them right back. Or you just curl up and you may either fight, flight, or submit. So threats are not helpful. What about voices? Now, it's not very easy to say, "I'm really upset with you," and keep your voice as if it's a monotone. And you can say, "I'm really upset." You can put meaning into there, but instead of yelling, "I'm really," you know, that yelling part. But you can put the meaning, but keep the volume down. Nobody's going to say, "I'm really mad." Tone quality and body language can communicate more than the words themselves. No profanity. The more you swear, the more you'll get sweared at. And what's the model? I mean, if we want to, some of the feelings that we put down there that are primary to our anger is when we're misunderstood, we're unappreciated, we're unrecognized, we feel abandoned or rejected or shamed or left out. A lot of those are relationship feelings. Like we want to connect. And whenever we start to use profanity and labeling, we push it even farther apart. So that's not going to help solve the anger issue. It's going to build it because you're going to feel even more rejected, more unappreciated, more left out. And how many of you like to have somebody point a finger at you? That often raises the anger level up too. In a sense, it's not, even though three fingers are pointing back at you, where they only see the one that's pointing off at them. So we can look at some of our own body language that gives information to the other person as we're dealing with anger. But to recognize that we need to, first of all, own our own feelings, identify, accept them, and then be able to deal with those issues to find a resolution, to figure out what my other choices are for responding, to let you know what's happening within me, and to take responsibility. And I think, are we at our time for any last couple of questions before we end? Yes?
Will you be talking at all about dealing with other people's anger?
Okay, yes, and I do a session tomorrow afternoon, I think at 3:45, that we're going to talk about the ABC of nutty ideas as it relates to anger. And that has a lot to do with how we perceive, how we, what we assume the other person is really meaning or saying.
So much of social justice issues and human justice issues are thrust forward by righteous anger.
Mm-hmm. And we have some choices then as to how we're going to deal with it. So often our anger, there may be a reason here that I feel very angry about because I feel it's unjust or I'm frightened or I'm something. And I don't deal with that particular person, I may let it out on somebody else. Mm-hmm. And so we often use substitutes because the person that we're really, I'm really angry at may be too threatening to me, be too powerful for me to deal with. So I may end up exploding at somebody who